This is John Rappaport. A lot to cover today. The Ohio disaster, train disaster. So it would be a mistake to just issue a blanket statement. Everything was okay except a conspiracy destroyed the train and lit the fire, the burn, and that's what happened, period. Otherwise, everything would have been okay. No. This is an environmental disaster. It's a corporate disaster. Many, many moons ago, I started something called the Great Boycott against eight major corporations who were at one and the same time pharmaceutical, genetic engineering, chemical, Dow, DuPont, Bayer, et cetera, et cetera. Some of the leftovers of the notorious Nazi cartel, IG Farben. These giant corporations like Norfolk Southern Railway tend to operate with impunity and protection and shielding. So if you want a conspiracy, you can look at that too. And they do all sorts of horrendous things, and they pay fines and they walk away. And they are shaping the future. And they are not just big players, but gigantic players. And they, in many cases, are higher on the food chain than governments. So I'm not going to just say, well, the train was okay, everything was okay, no problem. It's just that some terrorist group, like the groups or like the same group that has been destroying food processing facilities and energy facilities, et cetera, in a string of incidents all over the country and in other places, are the only culprits here. I'll get to trying to paint a scenario of what caused the derailment later on. But what I'm saying is, got to look at the corporations here. And part of the problem is that the whole climate change agenda has shifted focus to CO2, as if, well, these polluting corporations that are polluting with chemicals and all kinds of horrendous substances, they're not really the problem. The only real problem, industrially speaking, is CO2, and we have to destroy all economies in order to fix that. And when that jumps to the head of the agenda, then actual environmental disasters caused by these major corporations who then walk away are ignored, avoided, and the corporations are exonerated. So I'm going to present a whole raft here of evidence. Now, the first thing is vinyl chloride, which was the main chemical carried by the 150-car train weighing 18,000 tons that derailed at East Palestine, Ohio. Train was too long. It was a cost-saving device to have that train be that long and be that heavy. No question about that. But vinyl chloride, as you probably know, is used to make PVC pipe, which is universally present all over the place on the planet. And in most cases in the U.S., the vinyl chloride is made at the same location or right next door to the factory where the PVC pipe is also made. Get that through your heads. But there are also many instances where that's not the case, and the vinyl chloride is transported long distances to a factory that makes the PVC pipe. That should be completely eliminated and made illegal, because you are now talking about many, many, many trains transporting huge amounts of this very poisonous substance over long distances to be turned into PVC pipe. That should not be the case. Now, I'm all for free market, as you probably know, but I'm not for free market when we're talking about an industry that transports a very grotesque poison unsafely across long distances. So the primary move should be, and should have been long ago, to ban the transport of vinyl chloride in trains over long distances and simply say, look, you want to make PVC pipe? Then you make the vinyl chloride where you're making the pipe or right next door. That's it. That is what it is the case most of the time already, and it's going to be the case all the time. That is big number one, huge letters in the sky. And it's being completely ignored by pretty much everybody. So get that straight. This is a highly dangerous process and procedure of transport in the first place. Okay. Then we have the report some time ago, which seems to have disappeared, that the last car on the train caught fire some miles away from East Palestine. If that is the case, why wasn't the train stopped at that point? Protocol ignored? I mean, that's certainly one of the main things that would be on the safety protocol. A train car catching fire underneath. And you stop the train and you do a series of things to put out the fire. And you disconnect the train from that car. That's a big one that has been completely ignored. And then we have the President of the United States and Pete Butthead, Transportation Secretary, and FEMA, and the railway company, and Governor DeWine of Ohio, who all should have been all over this out front immediately, pronouncing the East Palestine area a disaster area, and offering and, you know, giving all possible aid and help and support, which has not happened until, it appears last night, shortly after Trump said he was going to East Palestine next week, and all of a sudden FEMA said, oh, we're sending a team, we're sending a couple of representatives, we're offering help, blah, 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 blah. Now, you have to understand that the state of Ohio is a major red state. Every statewide elected official in Ohio is Republican. Okay? East Palestine is overwhelmingly white, with less than 0.5% of the population black. So it's no surprise that the President of the United States did not get out there out front like presidents always do in the case of a disaster, whatever the cause, and say, this is horrible. Federal government is going to step in and offer all possible aid, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, because it's overwhelmingly a red state. You can be sure that if the train derailment in Ohio had happened in some rail yard, if it exists on the south side of Chicago, a black neighborhood, that Biden would have been out there in 5 minutes making speeches and announcements and clucking about how horrible this is, and that he would be there himself and his whole administration would be geared toward offering money, help, assistance, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, all the way down the line. You can be absolutely sure of that. So there is, excuse me, horse in the throat again today. Politics involved here, majorly political situation. grotesque, horrendous. And there are other factors as to why we didn't see aid and assistance rushing to the scene from the federal government. Because the residents of this small town, East Palestine, are very vocal. They're very outspoken. They're very angry. They're very resistant. And so when you send federal assistance, you know that you're not going to get passive acceptance. You're going to get people seriously demanding answers and transparency and information, and the whole story is going to blow up in the press and all over the world immediately. And so you want to avoid that for as long as possible, and even forever if that's possible. So they did avoid that. So that's another factor here. Looking at my notes. There are already class action suits against the railway emanating from East Palestine. So that also tells you how quickly the citizens are acting and what a shitstorm it would be and even will be once the federal officials get to the scene there, because the citizens are not going to just sit there and say, okay, whatever you say, we'll go along with. Now, the media proposition here is really despicable. Everything is fine. It's been declared okay. You can drink the water, etc. And many stories in the press are only about avoid people with misinformation about the derailment and the chemical spill. That's what these stories are saying. You know, I mean, they're not covering, they're not investigating, they're not going into this in great detail. It's just you're being misled and you've got to obey the government and shut up and do what the government says. Now, on top of that, we're being presented with a Hobson's choice here, that there were only two alternatives. Burn the vinyl chloride, which they did, causing the toxic cloud, or sit by and wait for a potential massive explosion of the vinyl chloride, which would send fragments and chemicals out there for miles. I want to see compelling evidence that these were the only two alternatives, in fact, because I'm not accepting that as the truth. I don't know what other alternatives exist, but I'm not willing to accept that these were the only two. Now, sidebar, how fast was the train going when it came to East Palestine? We don't know that. That's one of the things we don't know that we need to know. So let's get let's get to the chemicals. Let's get to phosgene, which was released, which is a horrendous nerve gas, in the burn, was released. And, of course, dioxin was also released. Experts have mentioned this. Now, there are a number of issues with dioxin. It was once called the most toxic molecule on the planet. So I'm going to go into a little history here. But the point is that when you've got dioxin in the air, in the land, in the soil, you are looking at all kinds of horrendous consequences, short and long term. Short term, dizziness, fatigue, acne, confusion, nervous system problems, long term, cancer, genetic mutation, et cetera, et cetera. This is not being adequately explained. Dioxin is one of the results of the burn that was done. Now, dioxin was originally came to light during the Vietnam War because it was found in Agent Orange, the herbicide defoliant that was used by the U.S. and sprayed all over Vietnam. It was a weapon of war and killing and destruction. And in fact, there is evidence to show that extra dioxin was added to Agent Orange to make it more deadly. Agent Orange was composed of two herbicides, 2,4,5-T and 2,4-D. 2,4,5-T was eventually, after years and controversy, banned in the U.S. 2,4-D is still used as a pesticide. And there has been a controversy on both sides, scientific, for a long time as to whether 2,4-D contains dioxin. A Harvard biologist named Matthew Meselson discovered dioxin in Agent Orange because he was commissioned to lead a task force doing a report called the Bionetics Report about Agent Orange use in Vietnam. And at that time, it came to light that dioxin was perhaps the most toxic molecule on the planet. So that is a little history about dioxin. So the idea that that was known to be a factor if you burned the vinyl chloride is horrendous. Okay, well, let's burn this shit. And we'll produce some dioxin, but, you know, it's the lesser of two evils. I'm not buying that. I want to see, again, compelling evidence that there were only two choices here. Risk a massive explosion or do the so-called controlled burn, which created the toxic cloud that is now moving above the U.S. Okay. Let's now turn to the Norfolk Southern Railway Company, which operated that train. Now, this train derailed a few days earlier, or there was an accident before the major accident. That gives you a clue. In 2005, there was a huge incident in Graniteville, South Carolina, with this railway company, Norfolk Southern. Large amount of chlorine and diesel fuel released into waterways, toxic cloud, town was evacuated, wildlife killed, just like now. Crops contaminated or killed. Lots of human injuries. Company taken to court. Spent $26 million for the cleanup. Walked away. Now, there's a big controversy about federal regulations on these trains. So it's being said that the new braking system, which has not been put into these large trains, which is an electronic braking system, as opposed to the old one, wouldn't have been put into this train anyway if the new electronic braking system had been legislatively bureaucratically demanded, because this train was not categorized as a high hazardous train, since some of the cars were not carrying hazardous material. This is all bullshit. If you've got a number of cars like this train that are carrying hazardous materials, it should be classified as a highly hazardous train. And this new electronic braking system should have been installed. Why? Because it stops trains in a different way than the old braking system. The signal to stop the train electronically stops all the cars at once, instantaneously. The old braking system transmits the command, so to speak, from car to car to car to car to car, and that's when you can get this bunching up effect when the train stops that can lead to derailment, which is what happened. Now, whether that was how the accident happened in East Palestine, I don't know, and nobody knows, but it's quite possible that that's why the derailment happened, because the signal was given on the old braking system to stop the train, and then the way it happens is all the cars bunch up and they kind of hit each other, kind of like a slinky, and boom, you get a derailment and a spill. So I could go into vast detail, which I won't do, on the bureaucratic, legal, corporate battle during the Trump administration, now during the Biden administration, to not mandate these new electronic braking systems, which was successful, and show you that all sides are corrupt here. Some of the government bureaucrats caving into corporate demands, Trump regulators not wanting to have the new braking system put in because of the added expense to the railway, Biden and administration not making a strong move now to mandate installing these braking systems, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But the point is that the old braking systems are archaic and ancient and haven't been changed forever, and the new braking systems should have been installed. And it's just another instance of government bureaucrats, legislators caving in on the take, cooperating with big corporations, in this case, Norfolk Southern Railway, to exonerate the company from having to do this, from having to install the new braking system. And there have been comments, and I can't speak to the definiteness, you know, the veracity, that the derailment could definitely have happened because the new braking system was not on this train. It's common sense to me, but we don't yet know whether the stopping of the train was the cause of the derailment. But it's a key issue, and I'm not confident that the investigation that's going to take place here is going to uncover this factor. I'm not confident at all. I'm just looking for the quote here. There's an article in The Lever, L-E-V-E-R, a very detailed article about the whole maneuvering and controversy over the braking systems. That's a good article. Let's see if I can find the quote. Would ECP, that's the new braking system, have reduced the severity of this accident? Yes. Stephen Dittmeyer, former senior official at the Federal Railroad Administration, told the Lever. The railroads will test new features, but once they're told they have to do it, they don't want to spend the money. So he's saying that whether or not the braking of the train caused the accident, if the new braking system were there on the train, it would have reduced the severity of the accident. Now, you're going to see conservative websites saying, oh, bullshit, blaming Trump administration for this is ridiculous. It ain't ridiculous, okay? It's not ridiculous to blame the Trump administration and the Biden administration. These corporations are above and beyond the Democrats or the Republicans. Let's get that straight, okay? We have to defend Donald Trump against these absurd charges, or we have to defend Biden against these. It's just total horseshit. The corporations are operating from a position of, we'll do everything in our power to influence, buy, bribe, connive, convince, and control government to our ends and our desires and what we want and what we don't want. And it's clear to me that there was a great deal of maneuvering during the Trump administration to keep the new braking systems from being mandated for railways, for trains. Which is what Pete Butthead, the transportation secretary, has said. And he's correct in that. Of course, as I said earlier here, he's not only negligent, but I would say criminally negligent in not stepping forward immediately and making sure that aid, massive aid, was available in every conceivable form to the citizens of East Palestine. And in fact, you know the story of how what Butthead was saying at the time of the derailment was, well, we want to make sure that the cleanup crews, inclusiveness and diversity are a major factor here, so that local people from the community, whatever, are being employed in the cleanup crews. And what he was really talking about was some kind of quota system for minority hiring in the cleanup crews, as opposed to, holy shit, look what happened in East Palestine. We're going to get all the possible aid to them right now. This is a disaster area. And again, I've got to emphasize here that if this were another state, another location with another demographic and another political persuasion, Biden would have been, out there in front minutes after this happened, promising all the aid in the world, declaring East Palestine a disaster area, which is exactly what he should have done. Happens with hurricanes. Happens with tornadoes, happens with oil spills. Okay. So I'm going to short circuit reading the brain cracking details of how the new braking system was eliminated. There's a lot of information about that in the Lever article. So again, we get this classification, high hazard flammable trains, HHFT. And there's been a lot of maneuvering here in order so you know, again, if a train is carrying these dangerous poisonous chemicals, who cares whether some cars are not carrying them? If they're carrying them at all, that's a high hazard, period. This is just horrible. I mean, what you're seeing out there is an untenable situation for the people of this town. Animals are dying, fish are dying, people are experiencing symptoms, short-term acute effects of vinyl chloride, of phosgene, of dioxin, and other chemicals. I mean, everything bad that you can imagine is happening there now. And the toxic cloud is moving. So what are you going to do? Well, you got to get out of there, really? Can you get out of there? Just leave your home, try to sell it. Who's going to buy it? And again, here's another factor which you know about, I know about, and that is giant corporations and government bureaucrats have a particular language, the language of generalities, the language of assurance, the language of the investigation was done, and here are the facts. Here are the conclusions. And it's all about generalities, and you don't get down to the details. And so the press releases and the statements that are issued by the railway, by the government, are not to be believed, period. Just not to be believed. And to say that's frustrating is a vast understatement when you're sitting in a house and you can't drink the water and you're experiencing symptoms and your animals are sick and dying and you have small children. Now, I'm going to suggest, and this is just a speculation here, I have no evidence for this, but anybody who wants to dig further into this should look at any possible past relationship between Governor DeWine of Ohio and the Norfolk Southern Railway. Just saying, let's see. And, of course, between the Biden administration and the railway, because we know that through a congressional action, a recent railway strike was averted. The union wanted paid sick leave and so forth, and they weren't getting it, and they wouldn't go on strike. And then Congress, you know, beat that down. Past relationship between federal regulators, Biden officials, Trump officials, and this railway company, Norfolk. Just saying. Okay. Just looking through more notes here. Now, As a sidebar here, I have to tell you that there's a controversy about PVC pipes, period, not just about liquid vinyl chloride. Now, PVC pipes are everywhere. But, for example, I found a statement by the New Jersey state government saying that the PVC pipes themselves are toxic, that they do leach or leak toxic substances over time. So the whole industry, you know, comes under heavy, heavy suspicion here. The PVC industry, which, of course, the industry defends themselves to the hilt, saying this is completely safe. All the evidence against it is cooked against us. We're not doing anything wrong. It's not a problem. Any other solution besides PVC would be much, much worse, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And again, and I've got to emphasize this, and I'll point out Robert F. Kennedy Jr. as an example. I don't agree with the man on everything he says and does. Why would I? Why would I agree with anybody on everything they do? But not only has he maintained a staunch position exposing vaccines, and not just the COVID vaccines, but he's also been a massive environmentalist in a good way for a long, 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 long time. He recognizes, I don't agree with his stance on climate change, but he has recognized for a long time corporate pollution of the kind that we're seeing here in an acute, sudden form in East Palestine, as not only a problem, but an ongoing disaster. And he was responsible with the group that he formed to clean up the Hudson River to a significant, significant extent after it was heavily polluted for a long, long time. And he wrote in one of his books that he was basically a free market capitalist. The only caveat was that major corporations have to pay for the damage they cause to a complete extent, and that therefore that has to be factored into the price they charge for their products. And if it turns out that the corporation selling product X has to now charge so much for that product that it takes them out of the marketplace because of the amount of environmental polluting damage they've done. Tough shit, baby. Tough shit. Otherwise, they're part of the free market with that caveat. Think about that. Think about giant pig farm factories, for example, and what's called feces lagoons that can be seen from space. They're so big that just bake in the sun. All kinds of horrendous stench, rotting material, you know, is right there because that's the cheapest way to dispose of it from hundreds of thousands of pigs shitting and pissing. And the damage to groundwater as this seeps down into the soil and so on and so forth. And if the giant corporations, pig corporations, had to pay for the actual damage that they're causing and the cleanup, not just with a fine, $100 million, $300 million, that's just chump change to them. Then what they're charging for pork in the supermarket, as, you know, it passes through the supply chain, would suddenly shock the consumer. Tough shit. tough shit. The corporation has to pay. So you're looking for a conspiracy? Are you a person who demands that every disaster must be a conspiracy? There's one for you, right there, staring you in the face. The corporate control of the economy and the government, giant corporations, who have giant slush funds to pay federally imposed fines, after which they walk away chuckling and pop the champagne corks, which we'll see may be the case here with a $55 billion corporation called Norfolk Southern Railway. What are they really going to have to pay? What are they doing now, handing out $1,000 checks to people in East Palestine and patting themselves on the shoulder and saying, see how charitable we are, and we have health experts you can talk to if you're having symptoms? What kind of bullshit is that? So it's quite possible that by the Robert F. Kennedy Jr. formula, PVC pipe would cost a hell of a lot more than it costs now because of toxicity, because of railway accidents like this one, like the one that I just mentioned that happened in 2005, same railway. Not the first time. Obviously, the situation was not solved in 2005. Now, it's interesting to note that as soon as Trump announced yesterday, let's see, that would be 2/17, February 17th, that he was going to East Palestine, FEMA said, oh, we're sending a team. You know, of course we're going to be there. You know, yeah. Trump can do something good. 150 cars on this train, 18,000 tons. So you would expect shorter inspection times for these gigantic trains. That's how it works. The company wants to save money. Okay, so now we've seen a gigantic number of explosions and fires at food processing facilities and energy facilities. I mean, it's just seems to be out of control all over the country and in other places outside the country. And it's more than reasonable to say connections, terrorist groups, funding, where is that coming from? Where are the pros, the experts who know how to set the fires to create the most damage coming from? These are not just idiots who are lighting a few matches and sprinkling some lighter fluid and running away. These explosions and fires and so forth are caused by people who know what they're doing. The takedown of America, the takedown of the economy, the takedown of independent nations, most primarily the U.S., because it is the foremost nation that stands in the way of the implementation of global governance at the top. That's not just fantasy. That's real. But the problem is, when it comes to mainstream media, there's no investigative reporting going on. And when it comes to government agencies, investigative agencies like the FBI, there is no major investigation going on. And what I mean by major investigation is, where is the fucking investigation that is looking at the connections, the potential connections between all of these separate incidents of explosions and fires and so forth? They have the technology. Their technology is famous for pattern recognition, analysis of separate incidents to find common features, and to begin to dig down and drill down deeper to find connections, because that's what any intelligence agency and major criminal investigation agency and anti-terrorist task force or bureau would do. Hey, we have 37 fucking incidents here of fires and explosions at key facilities. Think there may be a connection, Sam? Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, that's kind of a leap of whatever. I think we should investigate potential connection. Well, no, I mean, you know, let's just investigate each one separately. Let's look at each one, you know, on its own terms, and we'll see what happens. Bullshit. Bullshit. So try it if you think it's easy. You know, if you think it's easy to go to, let's say, 15 of the major outbreaks of fires and explosions that have happened at processing facilities of one kind or another around the country, including this one in East Palestine, and accumulating enough facts to make cross-references and interrelations and interconnections, try it. See how easy or difficult it is when you've got limited resources and vastly limited access to real information on the ground. Which should be the job of government agencies. And the fact that we're not seeing this kind of investigation come forth is called a clue. It's not just a clue about dumbness and idiocy, which it is, but also about intent or lack of same, that people in charge don't want to find out what the connections are. They don't want to know that. And last and not least, they certainly don't want to inform the public about what's going on. Because think of what would happen if the FBI suddenly woke up and said, okay, we have to do something called our fucking job. And they then issued a report that in 10 of these incidents, they found common factors and features and even personnel, you know, terrorists, and identified them and found out something significant about where the money and the funding was coming from. Think about what a shitstorm would suddenly be launched with that. And if they stood their ground, as one and all the media said, this is ridiculous, it's just the FBI has gone crazy here. No, we're not crazy. We've got the evidence. You are obfuscating and covering up in the mass media. We have the facts, and we're going ahead, and the DOJ is going to prosecute, and we're going to have fucking show trials on television. Think of what would happen in that parallel universe. So I am not by any stretch of the imagination discounting the possibility that the derailment and the burn in East Palestine was part of a pattern of these attacks. And that the derailment was potentially caused by an attack. That it wasn't just the failure of the braking system It wasn't a rear axle on one of the cars that broke, according to one report. It was something much more dark and ominous. But you've got to go at this from more than one angle. That's one of the bottom lines I want to leave you with. You've got to go at this from the corporate conspiracy angle that I outlined for you. You can't just leave that in the dust, because these giant corporations are governments of their own calling the shots. So you've got to go at this from that angle, and you've also got to go at it from the angle of planned terrorist attack, taking down America, nothing less. You can't ignore that one either. And where these two roads meet and overlap and cross, you hopefully find out as you keep digging. But again, it ain't easy when you can't get the facts on the ground in each one of these explosions and fires, because government agencies and corporations are keeping you away from the facts with their commissions and reports and after incident releases and generalities and bullshit. The chemical release here is way more significant than what the press and the government are saying in East Palestine. And dioxin is one of the main reasons why. There was a campaign, perhaps 25 years ago, to suddenly discount dioxin and say, you know, it wasn't really that toxic after all. Yeah, I mean, okay, it was in Agent Orange in Vietnam, and so we stopped that in Vietnam. We stopped using it, and we eventually banned the pesticide 2,4,5-T that contained it. But, you know, after a second look and a more sober assessment, it's not that toxic. And that was, in my opinion, clearly a cover story. In retrospect, and the initial assessment was correct, and the parts per million or billion, we're talking very tiny amounts of dioxin necessary to cause very, very, very serious problems. And part of the cover story is the dispersion narrative. Oh, when you put these chemicals in the open air, they just kind of, you know, vanish and disperse and float away, and there's no problem. Well, that's true for certain chemicals, but it's not true for all of them. It certainly isn't true. And think how easy it's going to be to bury this in the years to come. When, for example, cancer clusters begin forming around East Palestine, like they did around Love Canal. And how much press 5 years from now is going to be concerned about that in East Palestine? That's what the powers that be, the corporate and government powers, are banking on. Well, if we can just postpone, neglect, avoid, cover over with generalities, throw some money, blah, 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 confess that we were negligent, we'll do better next time, pay a fine, blah, 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 and we won't walk away. Then later on, when it gets worse and worse and worse over time for these people, nobody's going to remember. Nobody's going to care. Nobody's going to make the connection. That's how the game works. That's how it's worked every time. And I'll finish with this sidebar and aside, which is sort of personal. I got into being a reporter through dioxin, you could say. In the late 1970s, about 5 years before I started working as a reporter, I ran into a short, somewhat elderly, skinny woman named Ida Honoroff in Los Angeles. I don't remember how it happened or exactly where, but we started talking, and I suddenly was looking at one of the most relentless human beings I'd ever seen in my life. You could call her a radical environmentalist, you could call her a lot of different things, but she was a hero. And she said to me, I've got reports right here, Bionetics reports, showing that these pesticides, 2,4,5-T and 2,4-D, are horrendously toxic. Read these reports. God knows why she said that to me. I don't know. And she shoved these papers into my hands. And I had several meetings with her after that. And, of course, I wasn't a reporter at the time. I didn't do anything with that then, except, number one, I was deeply moved and impressed by Ida Honoroff. She triggered something that was, let's say, dormant in me at the time. And she did that to a lot of people, because she was such an improbable character and so yet relentless and never gave an inch to anybody. And so in the late 70s, I suddenly found out that on some kind of a holiday weekend, I don't remember, Memorial Day, whatever it was, there was going to be in the Angeles National Forest lots of campers. And it was pointed out to me that prior to this, there was a lot of pesticide spraying there, and there was a strong possibility that 2,4,5-T and 2,4-D were being sprayed and that the campers were going to be exposed to it. And it kind of drove me crazy. And through a friend, I was able to speak with some kind of a disc jockey talk show host guy in L.A. who had one of those voices. And he was extremely hostile on the phone. He said, this is all bullshit. I don't believe a word of what you're saying. I'm not going to go with this. Are you kidding? You think I'm going to go on the air with this and I'm going to talk to a friend who's an expert? And he actually got back to me and he said, I talked with my friend. He said, this is complete crap and nothing like this is happening. And that solidified at the time, still about 5 years before I started working as a reporter, my view of mass media and giant power as being insane, predatory, stupid, criminal, and so on and so forth. So that when in 1982 I started writing articles for LA Weekly in Los Angeles, the pump was primed, and it was primed by something dormant in me that came forth in the 1970s, courtesy of this woman named Ida Honoroff. If you had met her, if you had talked to her, I think you would have had a similar reaction to mine. Whoa, this is a force. This is unstoppable. This is evidence. This is conscience. This is attack. This is take no prisoners. This is no compromise. This is conspiracy, you bet. Visible, provable. So that's the sidebar. And I go back to the first 2 points, which I want to just pound on again. Vinyl chloride should not be transported anywhere in any railway car because it's used for PVC, and if PVC has to be manufactured, it should be done where the vinyl chloride is made, not to be transported, period. The trains are inherently dangerous. And I haven't found anybody yet besides me who is saying that right now. I assume other people have said that before, but I'm not seeing it right now. Okay. And complete failure of the government, the administration, to step forward immediately and declare a disaster area. Bottom line, they don't want this to be seen as a disaster. They don't want environmental corporate pollution to suddenly come to the foreground and take precedence over their climate agenda, for example. They don't want people to be reminded that this kind of pollution is everywhere. And it's real. And it's horrendous in its effects on all forms of life. That's the last thing they want, because it's a, hey man, what happened to our climate agenda? You know, the this and the that and the tree rings and the hockey stick and the, you know, CO2, and we have to stop all a fossil fuel economy and put in Dutch windmills and solar panels and, you know, and bankrupt every economy and destroy every country in the world with that plan. What happened to that? We got to keep that in the foreground. And this is like a fucking chemical spill. I mean, we can't let that come to dominate the public consciousness because it's going to impact on the giant corporations who run things and the government players who cooperate and the bureaucrats who do nothing. Can't have that. We don't want that conspiracy to come to the foreground and be highlighted and endure in the public mind that this is not just happening here in East Palestine, it's happening in all kinds of places. And for the most part, nobody's doing anything about it. Can't have that. So, no, Mr. Biden, you're not going to get out there 10 minutes after the train derailed or after the burn and say, my God, this is horrible. I'm going there. We're devoting all resources. This is terrible. And, you know, pollution, chemicals, destruction. No. It's also going to outdistance the virus narrative, which has come to the fore, which I covered in AIDS Inc., by the way, my 1988 book, when I explored the real reasons for destruction of the immune system that had nothing to do with a virus. And I called one of the chapters in the book Chemical AIDS. where in certain of these risk groups, so to speak, you could find chemicals, all different kinds of chemicals that were actually the cause of the destruction of the immune system, which was being called AIDS. Not in every case, but in lots of cases. And when I said the virus is a cover story for this and other things. And we're seeing that playing out again in a kind of negative fashion, see. Oh, my God, look at what they did in East Palestine and the chemical spill and the burn and the toxic cloud, the photographs and the people, the symptoms and the animals dying and everything, the pollution. Oh, my God, we can't let this dominate the headlines and the public consciousness because this is big-time corporate crime. It's crime syndicate conspiracy at work every single fucking day. We can't let this be the dominating news story that endures because we've got other fish to fry that we are using to destroy the economy, such as the virus, lockdowns, climate change, destroy the energy sector. That's what has to be the big out front story, not this one. So no, Mr. Biden, you're not going out there and scream about any kind of horrible thing that's happening to a red state and a red town. Hell no. Hell no. See that, understand that, realize that. Yes, we have to come at this from the terrorist angle of multiple interconnected related attacks on huge processing, food processing, industrial energy facilities, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That kind of black ops thing. Yeah, you bet, you bet, you bet, you bet, you bet. But we also have to come at it from this angle, the giant corporate pollution angle, that conspiratorial angle as well. Got to, got to, got to. This is John Rappaport. Thank you very much, and we'll see you next time.